Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard and Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, let's go. Hi, hello, everybody. Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710, SeattleSports.com, Seattle Sports app, and podcast platforms. All of them. All the various podcast platforms, wherever you find them, that's where you will find us. And we're happy to be there as well. I actually might have some Apple reviews for you if you want. We're nowhere closer to a 4.7. I know, we just keep making people mad. It happens, right? Ferry rider. So I'm assuming somebody who listens to the podcast as they ride around the ferries here in the great state of Washington says, great. This is a great show. I think Salk is the best. Wow. What
great,
a morning.
Good start, yeah.
What a morning we're having. Followed by meh, 3 stars. Afraid to ask tough questions in interviews. Just another radio show. Oh, that stinks. Sorry, WGT 1972. It's a bummer.
That's a different one. Okay, I thought you were following up the end of
it. No, it's a different one. And then in the 425, 5-star all the way. Longtime listener, big fan of the show in all past and present forms. I listen to all 4 daily episodes at 1.5 speed. And so I can fit it all in. Never miss it. And Brock and Salk are the best. Add in Maura and Justin, and it's simply the best sports show on the radio. How about that? It's very nice. Thank you. Appreciate that. What a nice start to the morning. But as you can see, this one's funny too. This is a 3-star. Need a breather. I need a break from Mike Salk every so often. I can only take so much Seattle sports garbage. Brock and Maura, thumbs up. That's good. Well, that is a little polarizing. And you know what? Sometimes in sports, sometimes in radio, sometimes in talk, you want to be a little bit polarizing. And apparently, the column I wrote yesterday on Richard Sherman seems to be threading that exact needle right down the middle in terms of polarization. There is some very, very, very unhappy people with that take and some people that could not agree more. And if you missed it, you can go read it at seattlesports.com. Essentially, Sherm decided to jump in the middle of the Mike McDonald Picturegate thing just as it was ending. Like, this story was over, right? Because it was a non-story. Story was over because it was basically a non-story. For the most part, no one was actually upset about it, which is good. It was
Cam Chancellor tweeted something or posted something on X, and he responded.
I saw that. Yeah, and then
I think that's when Sherm got started.
Right. Yeah. So Cam posted something, somebody replied, and then Sherm decides, of course, to go nuclear and take it to another level, and go on and on about how he's disrespected and no other organization does this, and you can go read it. I put up all of his comments exactly in the column I wrote. And I just think his response is typically Sherm in that it's all about him. It's not about the Seahawks. It's not thinking about the future of this franchise. It's not trying to figure out how the franchise can win and what the best method is for a new coach to step in and do what's best for his organization. It's about Sherm, which is kind of what it's always been about. It's always about him. Certainly, that's what it's been since the height of his career. And I don't know whether there was a tipping point or something that happened, but, that's sort of what I've come to expect, unfortunately, from Richard Sherman. And I know there's a lot of people saying, Salk, there's just a personal beef that you have because Sherm came on the radio show and didn't want to talk to you. Is it personal for me? Yeah, a little bit. Of course it is. I'm not going to pretend like it's not. Of course there is some personal attachment to this. But I'm glad you bring up that moment because that's just another example. That guy's going on one of supposedly his good friend and former teammate's radio show, and he can't do it. He can't swallow whatever problems he has that he's never really talked to me about personally other than just blocking me on Twitter unlike his teammates, who when they have a problem have had never had an issue getting in contact with me to talk it through. I've told you this story many times. Bobby Wagner didn't like something I said about him. You know what he did? He got my number. He texted me. We talked. We worked it out. It's really not that hard. And unfortunately, he couldn't do that. So he comes on with his supposed friend and good teammate, KJ. And what does he do? He blows up KJ's show to make a personal beef with me. Why? Because it's about Richard Sherman. It wasn't about KJ. It wasn't about the radio. It wasn't about the listener. It's about him. And this is another example of that, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not surprised that he didn't have all the facts. I'm not surprised that he made it about himself again. I'm not surprised that he doesn't care about the future of Seahawks football. He cares about the past. And Mike McDonald can't afford to do that. Mike McDonald can't afford to come in here and be worried about hurting the feelings of people that don't play for the team anymore because they want to make sure their own picture is up in one specific spot. Can you imagine if Mike McDonald was actually worried about that? Thank God he's not. I want him worried about the best defense. I want him worried about the best people to draft here in a couple of days. I want him worried about the X's and the O's and connecting with his new players and finding ways to motivate him and learning to do all the things that he's never had to do before because he's always been a coordinator and not a head coach. I don't want him worried about whether Richard Sherman is upset that they took down a picture. I want him thinking about the future. And, you know, the last line of his rant, or whatever it is you want to call it, on X says that this is very typically on brand. And I wonder who he's talking about. I think he's talking about John Schneider.
He has to be, right?
I mean, it doesn't feel like it's just organizationally, and I don't think he's talking about Mike McDonald. How would he know anything about Mike McDonald's brand? Nobody does. I mean, I know Sherm knows everything, but I don't think he knows that much about the Mike McDonald brand yet. So it's got to be a John Schneider thing. And you know what? Of all the things that you know, he says, that's the one I guess I'll listen to a little bit because there's probably some understandable sour grapes there. Pete was the daddy who would come in and tell everybody, oh, you guys are so great and I love you and you're wonderful. And eventually somebody had to step in and say, yeah, unfortunately, you can't play anymore. Unfortunately, we got to move on. And I'm sure that was upsetting. I get it. But I'm also not that surprised that he can't have, like, the big picture understanding of what that's like. So I love some of the replies, man. Oh, yeah, when I say all over the map, all over the map, you really screwed up on this. 12s will always love and respect Sherm. Without him, we don't win or even go to that Super Bowl. He's been loyal to Seattle. Yes, he has a chip on his shoulder, but this is a big reach. Followed by done defending that guy. You can only do it for so long. Maybe on the video board, they should add a scrolling montage of his tweets where he bashes the fans that paid good money to support him and his team.
Yeah, there's the only part of this that I wish he would have said is like, I wish the new team, the new coach, the best in the future. Mm. I just disagree with the decision to do whatever, but he didn't. And it didn't leave any room for any grace in there for me to go, okay, you're allowed to have that opinion and be upset and whatever, as long as you're not also condemning the current team, which is what it feels
like. Well, I don't think he's condemning them. Maybe he is. What I would say is he doesn't want what's best for the current team because then the current team might win another Super Bowl and he wouldn't have the only one in Seahawks franchise history.
Okay, yeah.
Because I think that's what he likes. That's my feeling. It's not like I'm inside his head, but I think that's what he likes. I think he likes having that. I think he likes being the only one. So you guys can read it. I hope you do. Tweeted it at the Mike Salk. I'll post it again here at some point this morning. You can just go to seattlesports.com and read it directly. I saw that and it just kind of ignited something because I don't think it's right. I don't think anyone should be going. I honestly didn't think anybody really believed this. And I mean that. I'm not like, I truly didn't think anybody had this take. Nobody of like actual consequence. And all of a sudden, there was Sherm. Showed right up and proved the point. Oh, I was wrong. I guess people did actually.
206 just wants
that.
To talk about the race on Thursday because we're one day closer. Ooh, so
the race. Well, here's the problem.
Do you run again?
No. No. Okay. I'm sore.
I did. I ran a couple more 200.
Oh, yeah? Did you? You went back to the track?
All out?
I did my normal run at the gym, and then I didn't go to the track. I was at Discovery Park with Bruin, and there was a stretch that was wide open, and I just did some...
Kind of what you like estimated?
My RunKeeper app to... Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Kind of estimated a 200.
Yeah.
So now do you have a sense as to how fast you ran it?
I think I do, yeah.
Okay.
But you're not sharing your time, so I'm not sharing.
Well, more all I want to know is, did you run in the 100%? Were you like 75? Like, have you really gone the pedal down yet?
Pretty close to 100%,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
You were able to sprint the whole way?
No, I told you. Like, towards the end, it's definitely more fast running than sprinting, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Taking notes?
Well, I just, you know, I have a strategy in place here, obviously. And so, yeah, I mean, this is really more of a mind game than it is a physical thing, Justin. You got to really start working the mind game elements of this. Yeah, sure. If Sherm taught me anything, it's that. You want to just start the whole mind game process as early as you can. Get in Moore's head, crawl around in there for a little while, and then when the gun goes off, do we know how we're going to be starting this? Do we have a starter's pistol? Has anybody rounded up a starter's pistol?
We got that.
If we don't have a starter's pistol, I'm out.
You can't do it.
Nope, I'm going to be bailing, and it will have nothing to do with my sore groin, sore ankle, or either of my two sore quads.
I don't think we've really pinned down like any details. No. We don't know what we're doing.
We should probably work on that at some point, maybe after the show today. All right, let's come right back with everything you need to know. We're 2 days away from the race. We're 2 days away from the draft, and the Mariners have their first Texas showdown tonight. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports. On 710.
The Museum of Pop Culture, Seattle's destination museum for music, film, fashion, and gaming, has savings just for Washington residents in May. See MoPop's newest exhibition, Massive, The Power of Pop Culture. Tickets at mopop.org/maycation.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com. O'Brien.
Planning to go to more than one Mariners game this season? Consider a Mariners Flex membership. You can choose your games and seats as you go all season long. Plus, save at least 10% on tickets and pay no fees. Come on board today at mariners.com/flex.
Real estate transactions can feel intimidating, but at Tycor Title, we make it feel more like a visit to your favorite coffee shop. Seamless, satisfying, and efficient every time. Trust Tycor Title with your next real estate transaction. Go to mytycor.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, in 2 days, the rumors and the mocking will go away, and we'll finally see what the Seahawks have in store for their future. Well, not all the mocking. I'll be mocking more after I beat her in the race. But for now, we have a bunch more rumors and mock drafts. Albert Breer reporting yesterday, folks around the league keep linking the Seahawks to Washington quarterback Michael Penix. We talked about him with Joel Klatt yesterday, and man, is he ever high on him.
And this dude is asked to sit there and swing it, man. And he did it as well as anybody. He passes the football, not throws. He passes the football down the field as well as anybody. If he goes to the right spot, I do believe Michael Penix can be a quarterback that leads a franchise to a potential Super Bowl. And because of that, and no other reason, I think he would be the one that I would kind of vote for pick of who are we going to be talking about in 10 years.
All right, so should the Seahawks pick him at 16?
Well, of course. And the only reason I didn't do that in my latest mock, which, by the way, comes out, it's out today, Joel Klatt Show. Just shameless plug. Don't worry about it. Nice. Salk. It's what us professionals do. I agree. I don't think he's going to be there. Okay. I really believe we're going to have all six of these guys taken before the Seattle pick.
Okay, well, we'll see. It's hard for me to imagine that six quarterbacks are going to go in the top 15 picks of this draft, but maybe they do, and that'll lead to a conversation about whether or not Michael Penix should be the guy at number 16. We're going to discuss with you guys coming up about an hour from now. Burt Breer goes on to mention Jared Verse and Cooper DeJean as other options. I'd have a real hard time going with DeJean. Just it'd be another investment away from the line of scrimmage, and I just don't think you can do that with their first pick in this draft. But he went on to comp Verse to Terrell Suggs, and yeah, that has me pretty intrigued. Daniel Jeremiah on yesterday with Chris Long has a little bit more on Verse.
I know what Verse is. Like, Verse is a very distinct style. Like, he is rugged and rough, and he's just going to be a car crash. Like, that's what he's going to do. He's going to, I mean, like, to me, you look at some guys like Judon was kind of like that coming out. Like, he's just going to test your brakes every single rush. And that's what the Verse, to be honest with you, Verse has a lot of similarities to Will Anderson. He's not as polished as Will Anderson was, but same build, same style.
God, that sounds incredibly good, doesn't it? Especially for a coach that you know wants to play a physical in the trenches game, especially when you know how important it is to set an edge. Yeah, I'm going to still have my eyes on Jared Verse as we get ready for Thursday. Seahawks conducting some voluntary three-day mini camp starting today through Wednesday. Yesterday through Wednesday. This allows for them to do a little extra work since they have a new coach. Their mandatory mini camp will be in early June.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
First real test of the season starts tonight. Mariners playing their first series against a division foe, and it just so happens to be the defending champion Rangers, who obviously gave them fits last year. Series not going to tell us for sure which of these teams is built better, but it is a little bit of a glimpse into how they plan to approach each other this season as they vie for positioning. And as Jeff Passan told us yesterday, there is a mental component as well.
I think at this point, you know, I look at series in the middle of the season not being indicative of a whole lot yet, right? To me, this is as much a psychological thing as it is, okay, like how is Logan Gilbert going to do against Dane Dunning, right? How is Bryce Miller going to do against John Gray? Like, we can look at the pitching matchups and all that, but to me, this is the world champions are playing against the Mariners. Let's see how they stack up. Let's see how the pitching navigates this lineup that has gotten even deeper than last season.
Well, Logan Gilbert, Bryce Miller, Luis Castillo will be the three for the Mariners. Dane Dunning, John Gray, Andrew Haney for Texas, and they start late this afternoon in Arlington. I'm looking forward to this. It's fun to see division rivalries continue, and maybe in this case even just kind of be built after last year. So first real test, Texas starts today.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Gotta be honest, Maura, I am still recovering from the text you sent us last night. I can't believe what you wrote.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Morgan Geeky. Remember Morgan Geeky, fourth line center, cast off from the Kraken at the end of the year for not being particularly productive? He scored 19 goals this year and added 20 assists for Boston. That's two more goals, two more points than Matty Beniers had in the whole season. And yes, he did it while not playing on a top line like Beniers did, nor averaging nearly as many minutes per game. Yikes. Now, that's a commentary on Beniers' season for sure. He did not have a good year, but I think it's also a little bit on how this team reshaped its roster last offseason. We kept wondering, okay, why were they unable to have the same success that they had the year before with a similar team? Well, maybe it wasn't quite as similar as we thought. Geeky, and you remember Daniel Sprong, their fourth line offensive combo? You know those guys scored a combined 37 goals this season? 19 and 18 each. That would have ranked third and fourth.
Was important to them too. They lost guys.
That would have ranked third and fourth on the Kraken. Wow. The only two guys who had more goals than Sprong or Geeky were Jared McCann and Oliver Bjorkstrand, who only had one more goal. That's insane. You just cast those guys off to bring in, what, Kyler Yamamoto and the center who got scratched most of the year? Bellemare? I mean, that's not good work. I know Ron Francis is trying to figure out what's going wrong, but I would say that's a big part of it. Francis also said yesterday they're working on the future of the coaching staff, going to decide in the next couple of days. His quote is, well, you're going to read into that one way or the other, but this is the process we do every year, and that's what we're in right now. All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know. I mean, I don't know whether that's a damning indictment on the general manager who gave up on those two guys and moved on from them, or on the coach who wasn't able to either advocate for them or to get even more out of them. But 37 goals between the two of them? 37 goals between two guys you had on your fourth line?
It's not like they got gigantic contracts elsewhere.
No, and it's not like the guys you brought in were significantly better. I understand they were working to try to make their team a little bit more balanced. That, yeah, while Geeky and Sprong did that offensively, Sprong especially has some defensive issues, and I'm sure that's frustrating for a lot of coaches. But the thing that you had over other teams the previous season when you went to the playoffs was an ability to roll out four lines all the time and beat them with depth, to keep coming at them. And your fourth line was so much better than other teams' fourth lines that when you rolled them out there, A, you stayed fresher, and B, you scored. Well, you gave up on that this year. It didn't work. So I think everybody's going to have to be thinking about it, whether it's thinking about the job the coaching staff did, thinking about the job some of the players did, and, yeah, thinking about the guy who made the decisions to acquire them as well. All right, coming up next, Joel Klatt joining us. And first of all, he's just ruthless in his attacks on me. So for everybody out there who loves to hear me get beat up, here's a good example, and it's coming up next. Beyond that, some fascinating insight on Troy Faltanu, Michael Penix, Jared Verse, and Latu. Stick around. You'll hear it all next on Brock and Salk.
You're free now, free to stream beyond your wildest dreams, free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber, your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Massive, the power of pop culture is Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture's newest exhibition, featuring iconic artifacts from artists Beyonce, Nirvana, and more. Planning a trip to Washington? Make sure to include MoPop in your itinerary. Tickets and info at MoPop.org.
Real estate transactions can feel intimidating, but at Tycor Title, we make it feel more like a visit to your favorite coffee shop. Seamless, satisfying, and efficient every time. Trust Tycor Title with your next real estate transaction. Go to mytycor.com.
Cantor Diamond is the only professional office for diamonds and diamond jewelry. Meet us in our professional Tacoma offices by appointment or globally by phone, email, Instagram at K-A-N-T-O-R Diamond. Truly the best diamond prices, bestdiamondprice.com.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Oh, man. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710. Just 4 days away, Brock, from the draft. It's going to be Thursday. I guess it's really 3 days. So 3 days. We're getting there. We're getting there. Thursday is going to be round one of the draft. Sorry, I really considered round two. Like, for those of us who are really into the draft and, like, kind of go deep with our analysis,
yeah,
right, watch a lot of film.
Think of how many man hours, right. Honest to God.
I really think of Friday as kind of being the first. Like,
sure.
Round one is for the people.
Yeah.
But for those of us that have been busy watching film,
well, that's
all
what
year
Bill
long,
Belichick said, right? 95% right. of the time is spent in the top 5% of the draft.
Right.
But, you know, it's for you and Stacey, you come in on Saturday for a reason.
Right. For those of us that are real draft nicks, that are really spending the time watching the video, know all the players. For us,
which would be great.
For people like me, the draft really starts on Friday.
Yes.
And in some ways, really not until Saturday. But Friday, I'll kind of give you as the in-between. Sure. Thursday's just for the people. Like, sure. You know me. At that point, it's like, or whatever. We've already kind of.
Well, this will be great. We'll bring Joel on here in just a second.
Joel
and we'll
knows.
Have him quiz you on fifth through seventh rounders.
Well, I didn't say that. I
no,
said
just see how equipped you really are.
I'm very, very well equipped. You know who was equipped was Booger. Booger knew everybody in this draft, man. He was on top of this thing. Joel Klatt joins us right now from Fox Sports. Joel, you're like me, right? You know the draft doesn't really get going until Friday, right? For those of us who've been watching the film the whole time.
Yeah, because, you know, there's no first rounders that are really contributing towards a Super Bowl. That would be silly.
That would be ridiculous. That's what the Seahawks have sort of argued for years. They never draft anybody in the first round. They trade out of it every time. How many... How many real first rounders do you think there are in this draft?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually think this is a deeper draft than last year. I think that there are probably 35. I think it's a little bit more than the 32. I think that there are about 35 guys that I can see as being legitimate first round talent.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's got to be as much as you've ever done. In these years, if you
covered
the draft,
I mean,
huh?
Like last year, I felt like there was 16, you know, and part of it is the COVID year in college and through NIL, guys are staying longer. So you've got this year is one of the first years that you've really got this combination of guys that stayed late and that have gone out traditionally. And I think that we see that reflected more specifically in the quarterback position where you've got the three guys that are traditional. You know, first round, JJ comes out after 3 years, Drake, Caleb Williams, And then you've got the old guys, you know, Jaden Daniels banged around a little bit, obviously Michael Penix and Bo Nix. So you've got this confluence of two different things, which is what makes this specific draft so unique.
I was chatting with one of Titus's baseball dad's buddies yesterday about the draft and football work and game prep and everything else. And he was asking me about some of that preparation. And I thought to myself, huh, I wonder how many man hours Joel Klatt has spent. I wonder how many man hours Daniel Jeremiah, whose full-time job is just comes into full, you know, full screen light come Thursday. How many man hours do you think DJ spends? How many man hours do you spend?
Well, DJ's a lot more than me, probably at a minimum double what I would do, because he does – I stop it at the third round. I do first two nights, and then I'm done. You know, and I let the real experts like Salk take over on Saturday.
Yes.
You know, and you know what I'm talking about, Salk.
Oh, yeah, oh, I
you're
sure do.
Dialed in.
Yep.
And so DJ, I know, starts Thanksgiving weekend. Like in earnest. I don't start until the end of the college football season. And Brock, I don't really start until then, because I don't want to mix like my NFL evaluations into, you know, what I'm thinking about from a college perspective. Cause I think those can be different. I think that we see that all the time. But man, I couldn't even put a number on it. I have no idea. I know just in the last week alone, I've spent easily 60, 65 hours just on the draft. And that's just in the last, you know, week and a half. Mm. So I couldn't even, I know right after the season, I start to put together my list. What I try to do is I try to put together a list of what I feel like are the top 200 players. And then I start to go back and I start to get bio information. And I start to watch film. And I try to have basically like this three-pronged, evaluation, where I'm trying to bring a specific information set to the desk, because DJ's the scout, right? Mm-hmm. He's the one that's going to scout the players. Charles Davis has a lot of the NFL team information, and I want to bring the college perspective. What were these guys when they were recruits? What is their story? What were they asked to do in their college programs? So I talk with a lot of the college coaches and strength coaches around the country, and the man hours is hard to put a number on.
All right, well, then let's ask you about some of these guys that we've had some conversations about now that I feel, you know, by this point, I feel like we're so invested in some of these players, like out of nowhere, like, well, they got to get this guy at 16 or they got to get that guy. So let's start on the defensive side of the ball. If both players, and I don't know if this will happen, but if both players are available at 16, Verse or Latu?
So if you're just going based on the play on the field, I think Latu would be your guy. But as we know, these decisions are not made in that type of vacuum. I think that the neck injury, you know, issues from Washington, you guys are well versed in that. And what happened, I get it that like he got cleared and he was phenomenal at UCLA, but the neck injury stuff is just a scary deal. And Jared Verse has proven that he is and can be incredibly productive. Now I think Latu is probably a more instinctive player. I would probably take Verse though. Yeah, you can't miss in the first round, and the injury issue I think is just a red flag, and that's not fair to him. Obviously, you can't control that. But that's part of the evaluation. It's got to be part of the thought process.
I think a lot of the thought process at that draft room down the road from us this morning is find a way to trade back, find a great trade partner. I think a pretty good point at 16, based on what happens in front of you, receiver, a quarterback, lineman, there can be a bunch of teams with needs. The one guy to me that is going to be really difficult to pass up if he's still there, so I'll set up the same question Salk just did, Troy Fautanu at 16 or trade down?
Oh man, I like him a lot. I know he's one of your favorite. I saw. Did you say he's one of your favorite to ever play at Washington? One of your favorite players?
Yeah, Roma Dunze is probably. I put Rome and Troy Fautanu is a player because he's an O lineman and he makes O line cool and he's an absolute just killer. I mean, he just wants to physically humiliate you.
And then the best college interview we've ever had on the station.
Yeah, and then he came on the show for 20 minutes, Joel, and it was like what.
He's like ready to co-host. He was awesome.
How is this possible? This guy's like kind.
God, I mean, you know, Brock's dream right there. Replace Sulk with
Troy Faltano. Yeah. It's either going to be him or Vita Vea. Probably the two best interviews. Oh, wait. Vita's not so
man.
Much.
Well, at this point, really anyone. Right, Brock? You know what I'm talking about.
I love the way you say Sulk, by the way. Yeah. You say it with such kind of a disdain.
Like derision.
Yeah, well, like Passan was on last week. And just what did Passan, Justin, what
he
did Passan call?
Me a short, stubby something.
Stump?
Yeah.
It was a stubby little chump.
Yeah, that wasn't
stubby
nice.
Little chump.
Yeah. What? Don't tell Joel about that. You're just going to give him ideas.
I mean, you know, if you're sensing that, Brock, it's because it's completely on purpose. I love Troy's versatility. I think that he can move around, which gives a lot of value, right? You're not just one of these guys that has played five straight years at right tackle, you know, which then makes me question, well, okay, like what are you going to do if you have to move around? I love his athleticism. The volleyball background is so intriguing to me, you know, as a spring sport in high school. Mm-hmm. And then the other part that I love, I don't really care that Sulk likes him because he's a good interview. I like the fact that his peers in the Pac-12 vote him as like, you are the toughest to go against. The Morris Trophy winner, right? Like, to me, that speaks volumes because they know, you know, on the field, you know, when a defensive back or a linebacker, you know, when these guys are difficult, you know, when their presence is felt on the field. And that to me speaks volumes. I know that he can play left and that's great, but the fact that he can have some position versatility to me is highly valuable. He's aggressive. He's got great hands, you know, all of those things. He would be tough to pass up. I really like him as a prospect. The hard part for Troy, candidly, this is a deep offensive lineman draft. So there's a lot of guys, and I think the evaluation will be different for everybody. Mims is a good player at Georgia. Guyton is a good player at Oklahoma. J.C. Latham, he's a good player from Alabama. Fuaga from Oregon State. Alt, obviously, Olu Fashanu. Like, there's a lot of good offensive linemen. So, unfortunately for him, I feel like his range is fairly wide based on those little evaluation margins from team to team.
Does that make him in some ways a better pick at 16 or so because maybe in another year he would drift or he wouldn't be quite that far down versus someone like Byron Murphy where you're looking at him going, man, there aren't a lot of high-end defensive tackles in this draft. And so maybe he looks a little bit better in comparison than he might look in another year. I guess the reason I'm asking is because I understand how all of the draft folks, the actual draft Knicks, not me, the actual draft Knicks, compare defensive end to defensive end, guard to guard, quarterback to quarterback. The challenge for me, though, is how do I compare Jared Verse to Troy Faltano or Byron Murphy to Michael Penix? That's where things get so dicey, I would think.
Well, I think that becomes a question of are you a team that will lean more towards need or best available? And that's a different style of question. I do know that the philosophy of the defense that Mike McDonald runs is incredibly ingrained. And it starts with you have to build a run wall. You just have to do – you can't play defense – unless you build a run wall, this is the verbiage that they use. And that starts with the defensive tackles. It doesn't start with the linebackers. It starts with the defensive tackles. They want to be able to jump between odd fronts and even fronts based on nickel and regular base personnel. They want to have three defensive linemen in there at times in the interior, two in the interior. And so depth is incredibly vital. You can't just say, well, we've got our two tackles. They need three, four guys in order to rotate and build that run wall. So to me, it comes down to organizational value. And I'm just assuming this is that I think that Seattle, in particular with Mike McDonald, is going to value a defensive tackle higher than most teams. And because of that, I think Byron Murphy, I've mocked Byron Murphy to Seattle. And I think that's a good location for him because this dude is a hell of a player. He's a 300 pounder that can run 4.87 in the 40. He's athletic. He can make plays. And from a philosophy standpoint, a mentality standpoint, and a structure standpoint, I think he fits what Mike McDonald will want to do.
Last two questions for me here, Joel. In 10 years, which of these Huskies will we be talking about in the NFL? Like, yep, that was a home run pick back in 2024.
I'd love to say all three. I mean, shoot, more. I mean, Polk's a good player. McMillan could be the most undervalued of them all because of the injuries, guys. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, he was. I know Rome physically has always been the most impressive guy, but man, look at the production a couple of years ago from McMillan. It's hard for me to pass on the opportunity to wax about Michael Penix. And here's what I'll say about Michael Penix. It is so rare in our game, Brock, that we cover on a week in and week out basis to come across a quarterback who is asked to do exactly what he would be asked to do in the NFL. Normally what we see is teams that have a far superior margin of talent with the good teams, and those quarterbacks aren't asked to sit there in the pocket and read full field reads and attack down the field with leverage and accuracy and timing, more specifically, 15, 20, 25 times a game. We don't see that. We don't see it. What we see are guys with incredible skill sets like Caleb Williams and Drake May, and they create, or incredible teams around them like Jaden Daniels. Think about what he had around him. Or we see a J.J. McCarthy that has a philosophy and a structure around him that allows him to only have to throw full field reads, you know, 5-6 times a game from the pocket. And here we've got Michael Penix. And this dude is asked to sit there and sling it, man. And he did it as well as anybody. He passes the football, not throws. He passes the football down the field as well as anybody. If he goes to the right spot, I do believe Michael Penix can be a quarterback that leads a franchise to a potential Super Bowl. And because of that, and no other reason, I think he would be the one that I would kind of pick of who are we going to be talking about in 10 years.
Then I got to say this, and I've said it to Brock this week. If you're the Seahawks and your quarterback spot is fine but not settled long term, and you truly believe what you just said, Joel, yeah, maybe he's not the number 16 pick in the draft, but if you get a chance to get a quarterback that you think can win a Super Bowl, screw it. Don't you take him at 16 and just let everything else fall where it may?
Well, of course. And the only reason I didn't do that in my latest mock, which, by the way, comes out. It's out today. Joel Klatchko. Just shameless plug. Big don't news. Worry about it. Nice. It's what us professionals do.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think he's going to be there.
Okay.
I really believe we're going to have all six of these guys taken before the Seattle picks.
Which in some ways helps Seattle, right? I mean, like that in some ways pushes good players to them. But if so, 100%. Let me just ask this: if he's there, you take him at 16.
I mean, I would. I love the guy. Yep. You don't see this. You don't see him throw. Brock, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yep. This type of skill set does not come around in college football. I get it. He's had some injuries in his past. But the ability to, from the pocket, attack a defense, not just take what the defense gives, not just operate the offense. This dude attacks the defense down the field with leverage. So when I say with leverage, I know Brock knows what I'm talking about, but Salk, let me kind of help you out. The leverage piece means that he's constantly passing the ball, not throwing it, but passing the ball to give his wide receiver better odds than the defender. He doesn't throw 50-50 balls. He throws 60-40 balls. He throws 65-35 passes. So in a lot of ways, these guys' job become much easier because the ball is constantly on the offensive player's side, even down the field, whether he's driving it, whether he's layering the ball, throwing the touch, throwing deep. He does a remarkable job of putting the ball in the exact spot that gives his wide receiver the best chance to make a play.
Is that why you say passing, not throwing? Is that what you mean?
Correct. It's like an entry pass in basketball.
Right.
You know, you always... You're trying to throw it down to the post player. You're always kind of like, you know, a little bounce pass away from the defender. He's passing the football, and it's beautiful to watch.
Okay, last thing. We're super late, but, you know, you're that great. And then I'm going to...
Sorry about that.
Well,
sorry.
Then I'm going to tell just a terrible story about you that I feel like I got to share because you didn't understand leverage. So here's my question. You can think about it while I share the story. From Bruce Irvin to James Carpenter to Jordan Brooks to Rashad Penny to LJ Collier, there have been multiple first-round picks where Salk will look at me after the pick and be like, who is that? You didn't talk about him. I'm like, I know. I have no idea who James Carpenter is. I've never talked
Brock
about him
literally
once.
Literally had no idea who James Carpenter was when the Seahawks selected him.
So think about a pick that the Seahawks could make that they trade down from 16 to 28 to the Bills or 26 to the Bills to get another second rounder and yada, yada, yada. Think of a name that may be a big surprise, and then I'll tell a quick story about Joel Klatt, who did not play leverage well, Salk.
Okay,
Joel Klatt's like a scratch or minus two golfer. He's unbelievable. And we had an event at Big 12 Media. No, one of these media days, I forget. And basically, ESPN rolled out their lead golfer, a guy named Steve Ackles, their producer, who, you know, who is basically a passer. He just takes what's there, and he understands leverage. And then there's Joel, who's more talented.
Right.
But Joel decides to try to cut some drive over a house.
Oh.
Yeah, and instead of
he's
like,
one of those golfers?
Yes.
Who's like, you know what, I'm going to pull out the baby fade here.
Yes.
Like, okay, Joel, I get it.
Yeah. Joel, you've got the tools.
Right.
It's not,
just
it's not
down
time.
The middle.
Just go beat ESPN. It's not time to put on a show. Understand leverage.
Wow.
This is true. This is true. This is absolutely true.
Oh, I'm so
this
mad.
This is absolutely true.
I'm so mad.
I tried
so
to.
Mad.
I did the U.S. Open local qualifier a couple of years ago.
Oh, I heard about this.
And I made par on the first hole, and I was all amped up, and it's a, like a dogleg right with OB left on the second hole, and so I hit it, and I'm like, it's just like not cutting, but you know, like I can't hit it through the fairway. And, but because of my adrenaline, it goes through the fairway. It's literally OB, past the OB stake by like
he's
a
done.
Foot.
He's done. He's
so
done.
I have to go back and re-tee. Now I hook it left. That's, so now I'm hitting five from the tee. And let's just say I took a 12 on the second hole of the U.S. Open local qualifier. That was fun.
I could do that.
Give me a name.
How,
late
how about
20s.
This? I've got my guy. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Ruke Orotohor. I can't even pronounce his name.
Uh-oh.
Who is that?
He's a tackle from Clemson. Athletic guy. He's almost 300 pounds, 4.89 in the 40. He was considered a leader, the leader, really, of that Clemson defense. Remember, Nick Eason is there at Clemson. He played in the NFL, coached in the NFL. They lose him. I think it's Ruke. I got to find a phonetic pronunciation. So there you go. That's an outside the box.
Let me just tell you.
A lot of people have him just outside of the top 50. You know, maybe the top 60 players. And as a defensive tackle, you're like, watch out. You never know.
The best answer to this question is if the Seahawks with the 16th pick select a player who one of the draft analysts can't pronounce.
No. Trade it down. We traded down from 16.
Oh, they 16. Trade down to 20 or something like that.
This is trade 16. Down. Right. This would be like,
Ruke.
There's nothing better than when the Seahawks draft somebody that the people on TV can't pronounce.
I'm trying to find his.
That's the dream come true scenario.
It would be perfect. It's Ruke, not Ruke. Like Juke, and then Ruke Ororo.
I'm
from Clemson.
All right, I'll tell you what. I don't know.
Salk would row his boat down Lake Washington through the cut.
I gave you a good one. Like at least you have heard this guy.
All in. Hey, Joel.
And if that happens at 28 on set Thursday night, you're going to be losing your mind, and we know it.
Yeah, tell me quickly before you gotta go.
I will never root for a pick harder than Ruke. Row.
What is your schedule on Thursday? Where can people see you?
Do you really care?
No, but I thought you might want to tell the people.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to hear you say
that. I don't care. Yeah, no, I watch ESPN. I don't care
on
where
the
you are.
NFL Network. I appreciate that. That's professional. Look at you. You're trying to take care of your
guests. We're an ESPN affiliate. I mean, things you got to say,
I mean, you know, you can go watch whatever you're going to watch. The real football people will be watching the NFL Network. I'll be on the NFL Network on the first day and second day with DJ and CD and Rich Eisen.
That's great.
I'll be there Thursday.
I'll be listening to Brock, actually, here on Seattle Sports as he offers his analysis.
I might do that as well.
Yeah.
We
used to have Clayton on that, and it would be fun. Clayton would read the picks ahead of time and then try not to make it seem as if he knew what the pick was going to be because it was
hilarious.
On a bit of a delay. Yes. Clayton would be like, I think they're going to go defensive tackle. Like, yeah, John, the pick's in. We all know that. John would be like, it looks like defensive tackle here. Yeah, we got it, John.
Joel, love
thank you, buddy.
Thank
appreciate
you, thank
it.
You, thank
and
you.
Why you got to make fun of John?
I'm not making fun of
him. Is that really how he talks?
Yes, it is how he talks, and that's what he would do on those days. All
now
right.
Down to John.
John Clayton on the sideline.
Thank you, Joel.
Thank you, buddy. There you go. There's Joel Klatt. That was fun, as always. Always enjoy chatting with Joel and getting his insight. And, yeah, I guess you can see him on NFL Network in two nights as we get ready for the draft. Okay. He said something yesterday, and then Brock said it, and then I thought about it more last night, and I am just getting more and more convicted on it. We'll discuss with Brock next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.